are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
It was surprising to me when I was looking at the data that teachers in their second year seem to have a larger than expected spike in their workload in terms of contact hours.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Vaughan O'Connolly, a PhD student at the University of Cambridge, researching teacher workload and its impact on student attainment and teacher retention. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the relationship between teacher workload and student attainment, the data on teacher attrition, and ways to reduce workload for teachers.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am interviewing Vaughan O'Connolly. Vaughan, could you say hello to our listeners and tell everybody what you do?
Hello, I'm a PhD student at the University of Cambridge, researching teacher workload and its impact on student attainment and teacher retention.
Okay,
I'm also looking. I'm also looking at the complexity of that workload, i.e., you know, can you have a difficult timetable, and does that have an effect?
Okay, great. So it's right up my street, hence why we're on a podcast. But I'll come back to your research in a moment. Could you just describe to listeners your own educational background?
I grew up in New Zealand, as the accent probably gives away. I went to a state school, as is typical in New Zealand, was a country school, went on to university after that, maths and physics, and a bit of educational psychology, and have now started up the PhD at Cambridge.
Okay, and at what point did you move over to London?
About 20 years ago.
Okay, and did you move over here to become a teacher?
No, I taught in New Zealand, and yeah. I had taught a little bit in briefly in Australia and the US.
Okay, great. And at what point, you know, going back to your research on retention and I guess teacher attrition, what were the forces that made you step out of the classroom?
It's a good question. I can't deny the fact that, you know, one always has an idea, workload. It's nice to take a break and refresh yourself professionally. And I had an opportunity to take voluntary redundancy at one point, mm-hmm. which helped fund an MPhil at Cambridge, which led on to the PhD.
Okay.
I have maintained through that period some part-time work. So I've kept myself grounded, I think, in schools as well.
Sure. And what year are you in for your PhD at Cambridge? In your third, fourth year?
Third year.
So you've gone through the upgrade phase, which is what I'm trying to tackle. Let's give listeners an insight into, or give us the strap line of your research.
Is less more.
Okay. And in terms of, you mentioned you're looking at teacher workload, retention and attainment. Could we just unpick the attainment aspect for a moment?
Yeah. The value that we have available is based on GCSE results and Key Stage 2 assessments, and it allows us to calculate value added, which I know teachers will be familiar with.
Yes.
For those who aren't familiar with it, it basically tries to measure how much progress students have made from the end of their primary schooling to GCSE.
Yeah.
And it's not without its problems and criticisms, but it's possibly the best measure we have at the moment. Certainly, it's a useful and publicly available and policy appropriate measure.
And, you know, when we first met probably 6 months ago at the Summer Festival at Cambridge, when you were sharing your ideas and I was sharing mine and things, and kind of that's how we, I guess, connected with our own workload fascination and kind of patted each other on the back. What I like about your work is that it's already starting to influence the ears and eyes of people at the Department for Education. Could you just give us a little insight into some of the things that you're doing at that level?
Well, just that they've been very supportive and very interested in any ideas which will, you know, basically lighten teachers' workloads, and looking for ways to do that with, obviously, without jeopardising students' learning. And so they've been visiting us, finding out how the research is going, and keeping track of that. But I'm not the only person there working on this. There's a few other people in the faculty. Who've been working on similar things.
So in terms of your research methods, you know, obviously we're going to have a range of people listen here, but if we consider the majority of teachers who aren't quite yet MA or PhD level, if we just give the basics of research methods that you're using in your studies, what are you up to week to week?
Sure. I was chatting to a head teacher about this recently. And I said I use the data from the school workforce census, which is done in every November.
Yes.
And she said, I'm pleased to see it's being used for good. So, and because there's a lot of effort goes into submitting those census returns. You know, every November, for people who aren't familiar, every November schools have to submit a return on how many teachers they have and what they're teaching. And
yeah, that's, you know,
and that enables me to look at how long people have been in each school, how long they've been teaching, whether they move schools, whether they leave teaching in the state sector. And also it enables me to analyse, to a certain extent, school timetables in secondary schools. And that is my focus, I should say, is secondary schools.
Yeah, so my fascination with at least teacher attrition came with the you know, Department for Education census, as you'll know, is that we often hear in the press that teachers leave within the first 5 years, but when we look at the greatest attrition rates, it's typically in the first, second or third year. What insights do you have from that data that you're analysing on a regular basis?
So, I mean, you're right. It was surprising to me when I was looking at the data that teachers in their second year seem to have a larger than expected spike in their workload in terms of contact hours. So I'm not able to measure marking or workload outside the classroom, but just in terms of their contact hours, second year teachers, it seemed to go up a bit more than you'd expect.
Yeah.
So I was really pleased when the early career teacher framework came out and the government said they were trying to give or would give second year teachers 5% time remission.
Yes. And Vaughan, could you tell us what your plans are for the year ahead in terms of where you see your research evolving?
Sure. We're trying to confirm the statistical models that we've been working on up till now and just make sure that we've sort of done everything we can do to show that they are robust. Because at the moment, it looks like lighter average workload in departments is good for results. And it looks like it's good for retention. And I'm also seeing some interesting things about timetables, which we're just making sure that those results are fully robust.
Interesting because... you know, when we always get research headlines, we always think, well, we don't need to know that. But it's interesting that when you're looking at the data, if you have a lighter workload, you will get good results. It totally makes sense. But sadly, in the profession, the default mode is not set that way, isn't it?
Well, this is one of the things that I suppose, because it's expensive to look at, has been one of the last things to be looked at. But internationally, there's a big variation in how much contact time teachers have.
Yeah.
And some high performance countries seem to give teachers lower contact hours. And so it's worth looking at because there is quite a variation in the UK, in England, at least in secondary schools as well. Mm-hmm. So, and I think where I want to take this is I want the idea is that, you know, not all time is equal. schools need would be, I'd encourage schools to think creatively and say, is this the best use of an hour that we have? You know, is giving time to a teaching activity a better use of time than, you know, some staff development or some other initiative?
Yeah, I would always argue that staff meetings, if you bring 50 teachers together and analyse their salary per hour over the academic year, you've got to make that staff meeting really good use of time and money, otherwise it's pointless. Now, I'm going to put you in a corner. So based on your own teaching experiences, and I know in several countries, and also now your research, is there anything in particular you would like to see change within English education?
I think some schools are doing this already. The hope is that we'd see more of it. I've also been analysing the TELUS survey and its impact on workload and thinking about how that relates to timetables. And the connection is that greater levels of stakeholder engagement, i.e., school leadership teams that are really engaging all the staff in policy development and decisions throughout the school, what we might call distributed leadership, it has quite a positive impact on people's perceptions of their workload and on their job satisfaction.
Okay. I read a piece of research, sorry to interrupt, on the myth of distributed leadership. Actually, I might signpost it and send it your way, that actually it's a fad, is what I read. But sorry to interrupt.
Right. On that, I would say all schools are different and it depends on the context.
Yes, of course.
To link it back to timetables, I've worked in schools myself where there's really robust discussions when putting the timetable together. And I know of schools where it's outsourced to people who get give very little opportunity to colleagues and teachers to actually say what would be effective for them. Mm-hmm. When I look at the timetable structures in the data that is in the census, there are things like, you know, teachers having classes they haven't taught before has an impact on their later retention.
Sure.
So if someone's got a particularly difficult timetable, small classes, therefore they're seeing a lot of students, it's a lot of names to remember, a lot of reports to write, those sorts of things. My hope is that I'd like to see a lot more discussion between the people making the timetables and the people who have to then live with the timetable.
Now, workload continues to be a problem in many schools, and on my travels, marking seems to come up time and time again as the biggest burden. Do you have any and I know it's not necessarily the focus of your research looking at the minute detail, but I wonder if you've unpicked anything, whether it's any current problems or possible great ideas that you've seen so far.
My thought about this is it links back to the question about time and how we use time and what's the best use of time. Mm-hmm. And we're all aware that since John Hattie, the notion of an effect size.
Yes.
And the question I have, and I think it's worth a discussion when you're planning a marking initiative or, you know, we're discussing, should we be doing detailed marking on a weekly or fortnightly basis versus peer marking or pupil verbal feedback to the class, we need to have a discussion about, well, what do we really know about the effect size of each of those interventions and means of feedback? And is that the best use of that hour? Because, mm-hmm. It takes a long time to give written feedback. Mm-hmm. And I personally, in my own teaching, have found feedback, verbal feedback to a group quite helpful.
And have you seen any, discovered any amazing work going on in terms of how schools are addressing workload? Anything you could share?
I've been reading, my new book is a book by Ted Dintersmith on what schools could be. And there's some interesting things there about how schools are really just taking a very different approach. Mm-hmm. And it, some of it's he did a trip around America visiting loads and loads of schools who were innovating in their own ways that were making a difference in, you know, practical terms, mm-hmm. and has written a really good book about it. So I've also had the privilege of hearing the Peter Ellis, the principal of it's called Templestowe College in Melbourne,
right?
Who've been doing some really interesting things on student agency and really involving students in planning their learning, which is having quite an interesting impact on workload.
Mm-hmm.
I also, you know, just along that, there's Melbourne Grammar School for Girls.
Yeah.
Have taken a much more university-like approach to their sixth form. So they've dialed down the number of actual face-to-face classes that are mandatory, have boosted blended learning, and gone to a more flexible system and are seeing really good results.
Sure. And before we came online, we were talking about, you know, it's the 18th of March today, so we're talking about the coronavirus pandemic sweeping the world and how we're all working remotely. Any kind of thoughts on how teaching is going to evolve currently and perhaps in the future?
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how you know, technology proves useful or not, because obviously it's appropriate in certain circumstances, but not others. You know, as a profession, it's going to be really interesting to watch how these tools can help us through this really difficult period.
Sure. I'm going to give you one more kind of question on your research, and then I'm going to fire loads of quick fire questions at you and kind of try and get you off guard. So a question for you, Vaughan. Given what you know 3 years into your PhD, and I know you're now doing this full time and started part time, is what tips would you give for people starting that journey or contemplating doing research in terms of how do you get around, your head around mixed methods, research processes, literature reviews, methodologies? Any tips there?
I'd say it's going to be a really enjoyable process. It should be an enjoyable process. I enjoy reading widely. Don't be frightened of going off on small tangents, but talk to your supervisor regularly just to make sure that there's a coherent sort of theme to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, education is tremendously exciting. Research in it is incredibly rich, diverse, and it's a great place to be. And in terms of the research, the PhD process, it's just one of those things to keep chipping away at, writing a bit every day, as I know you do with your blog, evidence that a little and often is good. But planning ahead for holidays, I mean, when I was working part-time and studying part-time, school holidays were really important. And then the other thing is give it a go. I mean, it's not impossible at all. It's, if you keep chipping away at it, it's very doable.
Yeah. I'm trying to do my third literature review now, and I found the first two I put on ResearchGate, they'll probably be quite embarrassing looking back at it in 3 or 4 years' time, but you have to have a go, I suppose, don't you?
Well, I mean, it's impossible to cover everything because there's such a volume of work out there. And at the end of the day, I mean, we're practitioners as well, so we'll have a certain sense of whether something makes sense, which I think is really important. That's a priority for research education in the UK at the moment, is that close to practice research.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What I'm going to do, I'm going to just chuck loads of quick fire questions at you, try and not pause and hesitate if possible. So here we go, let's see how we get on. So within your research itself, what's the particular aspect you're working on right now?
I'm looking at timetables and what's the impact on teachers wanting to move school or leave the profession.
Okay. And what do you do to relax?
I read.
Okay. When last did you visit New Zealand?
I need to relax a little bit more. I think yes. That's why I hesitated there.
Okay. When last did you visit your homeland?
A year and a half ago. I try and go home every year, but it's been a little bit that longer.
If listeners had 2 weeks planned to visit New Zealand, what would you recommend they do?
That's a good question.
So the budget's anything, you can do anything you want. What would you recommend? Top tips, top sites?
Abel Tasman National Park is brilliant. Fiordland, beautiful. The South Island of New Zealand, I'm biased because that's originally where I'm from, but I do think it's pretty spectacular.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming you have your dream job, but if you weren't a teacher stroke researcher, what would you have done if you could have done anything?
I probably would have been a psychologist.
What book are you reading? What other book are you reading?
I'm reading a book on a meta-analysis of leadership effects in schools, particularly because they in Holland they did a review of, you know, teaching time, and is more teaching time really a good use of time?
Okay.
Following which, they reduced the amount of contact time students have in school.
Right. What would be your piece of advice for a full-time teacher wanting to conduct some action research in their classroom? How could they go about that?
Read about it, start, take lots of records, get someone to give you some sort of supervision, as it were, and sense check it with your colleagues. It's a process, action research, so, you know, you've just got to iterate. It's one of my favourite words.
Sure. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
I'd like to hear from Ted Dintersmith, the author of the book What School Could Be, or Peter Ellis, the principal of Templestowe College in Melbourne.
Okay, so I'll try and check them out and get them in touch. Where can listeners find out more about your research, or a website, or a blog, or I know you're on Twitter. Could you just mention those?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, and I have a blog, but it's not been very regular. I'd be put to shame by your blog, I think. So,
all right, well, send them there and we'll give you a shout out and a bit of help. Now, I know we shouldn't be stockpiling during the pandemic, but is there anything that you've run out of at home that you need to buy?
No, I mean, at the end of the day, I've got lots of porridge, so if it, you know, I can eat that, and I've got plenty of soap, which I think is really essential.
Yeah. Okay. And last question, Vaughan. What would you hope to be your legacy?
I'd just like to leave the world a little bit of a better place.
Sure. And that's a lovely thing to end on. But thanks for your time, Vaughan. Fascinating research. Very, very important. And I can't wait to see it published in a year or so's time. So good luck with that.
Thanks, Ross. Much appreciated.
Yeah, and thanks again. And I hope that your research makes the DfE listen, and we start to see, hopefully, reduced timetables for our English teachers.
And timetables with a little less complexity.
Yeah, thanks. All the best.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.